and Merry Christmas from the Great Lakes Waterfowl Podcast. Hope you're having a great day with family and friends, whether you're on the road heading home or just taking a break from the politics of family, I'm not sure, or maybe heading back from the duck blind. But either way, hope you have a wonderful Christmas. Hope you enjoy this episode. It's going to be a really good one with Travis McLeod, the owner of Last Flight Taxidermy, giving us all sorts of tips to take care of your bird, choosing a taxidermist, being able to eat the bird as well as mount it, and all sorts of great stuff. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. This is going to be a great episode. This is the Great Lakes Waterfowl Podcast. And welcome back to the Great Lakes Waterfowl Podcast. I'm Dan Miller, and this is powered by SuperiorDecoys.com. I'm excited to be joined by Travis McLeod. He's the owner of Last Flight Taxidermy in Lowell, Michigan. He's won multiple awards. Multiple is probably an understatement. Known as one of the best, if not the best, waterfowl taxidermist in Michigan. If you look at anything, any posts where anyone asks about a waterfowl taxidermist, there are about two other suggestions and then 50 people recommending Travis. So I think that speaks for itself. Hey, Travis, welcome to the podcast. Appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So, man, it's end of the season in Michigan for all intents and purposes at this point, and it's probably just about the beginning of your season.
Yeah, I just recently stopped taking birds in on the year. It's been an incredible season. Everybody's been pouring through the doors. Like you said, it's only a couple more days of hunting left in Michigan, but lots of guys out there are taking trips too, traveling around and hunting. So
that's true. What are some of the coolest birds you've seen this season?
I don't know. It seems like every year there's like a certain bird that dominates, like just kind of something that's unusual for a quantity wise. And this year for sure it was the black duck. I don't know why. A couple years ago it was the speckle belly. Everybody was shooting Michigan specs, and this year it seemed like everybody was getting their black ducks all over the place right from the beginning of season on. I got some just beautiful, beautiful black ducks in.
Yeah, black ducks were heavy this year. I don't know if there's a population difference or if it just shook out that way.
Yeah, I just had a guy that was waiting to bring me a bunch, and he just brought me in three today, actually, two drakes and a hen. But yeah, it was their first group of black ducks they've ever killed. So happened to a lot of guys this year.
Are you getting any like oddball species out of Michigan this year, like king eiders or Harleys or anything like that?
No, matter of fact, I didn't this year. One of the weirder things the last few years, 3 years in a row, I got in Egyptian geese. I took one in every year for 3 years in a row, killed here locally. Kind of a completely random. I mean, you could look up what an Egyptian goose is, but not supposed to be here. But just crazy things that people kill sometimes when you're out there hunting.
So is that like an aviary escapee, or is there any?
Yeah, most likely. However, I mean, none of them were like banded or toe clipped or anything like that, you know, to indicate some sort of aviary. But most likely, that's how they got out. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, really, really cool, pretty birds.
So are you're pretty much done taking birds for the season then, right? You're completely
correct,
full?
Yes. Yeah.
So I have to ask, I feel like there are a lot of myths out there with regards to taxidermy, from field care to, I don't know, everything. So I was hoping that you could come and clear up some of these myths. What's the most frustrating thing you see as a taxidermist on the birds? And this isn't outing anybody. This is just reality. This is just how it is. But I'm sure people do stuff to their birds that make life a little bit more difficult for you.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that just is continual every year is always just the packaging of the bird. I mean, obviously, you kill a bird, you take that you want mounted, you take decent care of it in the field as best as possible. I know sometimes in rain and good old duck weather, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. But the biggest thing is once you get it back home and you get it in the freezer, no nylons. Nylons is probably the number one thing that I see that reoccurs all the time. You know, guys always bring birds in nylons, completely unnecessary. The And then another thing, between the nylons and people putting them, wrapping them up in towels, they think keeping them dry. You know, they want this perfect dry meat bird in the freezer, so they wrap it up in a towel. And what that does is it just draws all the moisture right out of the bird, and it freezer burns the birds very, very quickly. You know, you can take a bird that is perfectly good, will last a year or two packaged correctly, but you put it in a towel, wrap it up in the freezer, and now you've cut that shelf life to 6 months maybe at the most in the freezer before that bird is going to be no good and dried. So, I don't know, those are the main two things that always pop up is nylons and towels. You know, it increases freezer burn. It's just like I always say, if you bought a nice porterhouse steak and you're going to, you know, preserve that steak to eat it in a month or two from now, I mean, how are you going to package it? You're not just going to set that thing in a nylon and put it in your freezer and expect it to be delicious in a couple months. You know, you're going to package that thing in layers of plastic, airtight. You know, that's going to preserve it the longest.
So if all these ways that we've heard forever are not the right way, what is the right way to preserve a bird for taxidermy? It makes it easiest for you and preserves the bird.
Easiest thing in the world is just plastic bags. I always say if they fit into a Ziploc, you know, most people have gallon Ziplocs at home. Some birds don't fit quite into a gallon Ziploc, but, you know, 2 gallon Ziplocs work great too. But the biggest thing is just getting them into plastic, wrapping them up, multiple layers if possible, you know, 2 or 3 bags, never hurts nothing, and get them right into the freezer as soon as you can. What I prefer is to wrap their heads underneath their wings, like on the belly side of the bird, so it's not this big long popsicle sticking out. Keeps them nice and compact like a football. Wrap that head up underneath the wing on the belly side nice and tight, you know, and then they fit better into plastic bags as well. Because if they're frozen and you got them froze like that, you drop that bird, sometimes they can snap their neck right in half, which isn't a good thing either. But, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is get them in plastic, push the air out of them, and just get them in the freezer as soon as possible.
So, obviously, guys from around the country probably have seen your work. Not probably, they have. I've got a bird in a freezer in Green Bay right now, beautiful hooded merganser. And if I want to send that to you to where, and I know you're full for the season, but just hypothetically speaking, you would take this bird. How would I get it to you? What's the best way to ship a bird? Is it possible to ship a bird reasonably to a taxidermist?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of shipping when I first started out. But recently, so some guys will ship me birds. That is perfectly fine. They package them up in a cooler, put some ice packs in them, and they go ahead and ship me a bird. And generally, as long as it's here within 2 days, they're perfectly fine, especially shipping them in the winter. But now anymore, I've had too many bad things happen with shipping mounted birds through the mail. So I do not ship birds back anymore. So if guys want to save a trip and ship me a bird, that's perfectly fine. And then they drive down and pick up that bird when it's completed. I've just, like I said, I've had bad experiences with UPS and shipping birds. And my last package I actually mailed to a guy in New Orleans was completely lost in the mail. 2 birds never made it to their destination. And after that, I just said that is enough. It's just another headache I don't like to deal with.
Yeah, all that work kind of down the drain.
Yeah. And you know, it's just bad all the way around. I feel terrible. A customer doesn't get his bird, and you know, there's really, you know, you can only blame so many people in UPS. So,
yep. I mean, life happens for sure. Yeah. That makes sense. So put the bird in a cooler, put some ice in it and ship it like 2-day priority or UPS next day or something like that. And it's good to go to get to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the time, if it's within, I mean, a lot of guys ship them to me within Michigan too. They might live 3 hours away. They just don't come this way that often. So instead of taking a whole day to get here and back, they just go ahead and ship me the birds for the day. And then when they're done, then they organize something to actually come and, you know, pick the birds back up directly.
Absolutely. So when guys are choosing a taxidermist, I think this is one of the most frustrating things I see on social media, which is actually kind of a long stretch. But there's a lot of frustrating stuff out there, but guys shoot their first bird, they shoot their first duck or a trophy of whatever, you know, a new hunter, maybe it's a kid's first bird or something. And they send it to the first taxidermist they can find in the phone book or whatever. And they get a bird back that looks like garbage. Would you say that, I mean, all you do is birds, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of something I recommend to people is to look for a taxidermist that focuses on birds. Cause I could be wrong in the taxidermy world, but I feel like birds are one of the more difficult things to do correctly. Do you have any tips for someone looking for a taxidermist besides to go straight to Last Flight? Cause you're full at this point, but,
I mean, anymore with social media and all the advertising and stuff out there, I think, people recognizing good work and bad work is easier now than it's ever been. I think with the, you know, all the guys advertising and everything, there's the ability to see multiple taxidermists, check out their work via their website or Facebook page or, you know, however. But even then, some people still, it's hard because some people still don't know that. I mean, you've seen it, I'm sure, where you see a guy post a picture. I just got my wood duck back, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's amazing. I love it to pieces. And you look at it and it's not amazing.
Well, he loves it because it's his bird and that's understandable. But the
quality of the taxidermy isn't there, and some people don't recognize that. But what I always say is, I mean, you look at a photo. I mean, you know, give the taxidermist a photo of the bird that you're wanting to do in the position, like an actual photo now, not another person's mount, and compare that photo to the taxidermist's work. That's one really good way to see. I mean, are the feathers lined up the same way? Is it smooth? You know, is it in a natural look? You know, that's going to be a straightforward way. And in my world, another way to tell is ask the guy, when was the last time has he competed? Does he have any awards for his work? I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask those types of questions. Most of the guys out there that are doing competitions actively, and those are the guys that are trying to improve their work. They're trying to get better at things and produce the best quality mount as possible. So, you know, if you call a guy and he's got lots of awards within the state or world shows and, you know, first place ribbons and stuff, I mean, obviously that guy's going to do hopefully a pretty good job for you. But definitely do your research on it. I know I'm full and I hate it. And I hate turning people away for all these next few months. But what I hate worse is seeing guys that don't come to me and then they choose somebody that, you know, is not good. It's okay if they go to a different taxidermist, but choose one that's going to do a good job for you.
Yeah, it's worth spending 40 or 50 bucks more than the average.
Well, yeah, and most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time in this world, in the taxidermy business, yeah, I mean, price, you know, will dictate quality. Guys out there charging $150 a duck, you know, probably going to be a little bit of a subpar work. So, you know, that also can play into choosing a taxidermist as well, for sure.
And it's not just the cosmetic look of the bird when it first rolls off their shelf, right? There's also a lot of prep involved that could potentially make your mount fail to last over time, right?
Correct. Yeah. Improper fleshing and cleaning of the bird, you know, can result in a bird that after 5 years is leaking grease everywhere and feathers are falling out, bugs get in it. And pretty soon you don't have a mount anymore. You know, so that goes to that whole low, you know, low quality, low price mentality. That's very, very easy to happen.
Josh Haverkamp wants me to tell you that you're his hero.
Oh, thank you, Josh. I love you too, Josh.
I don't know if that part's going to get cut from the final podcast or not, but, I always, you know, you think about guys that are going to like Alaska and they're going to get a Harlequin and or a Barrows and or both or a King Eider, and they come back and it's like you've got one shot to get that right, because most guys are saving up for years for that trip. You don't want to screw up those birds, you know, by choosing the wrong taxidermist.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a customer headed to St. Paul Island this year. Hopefully, bring me back some kings. I'm looking forward to those birds.
So one of my favorite things to use in the field. I try not to use it too often, but it definitely never leaves my lanyard. Is the finisher for dispatching birds. I love it. It works really well. I've never used it on a bird that I want to mount because I've been told that it can make things difficult if it's not used right. And I don't know if you can share a little bit on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some birds come in that were dispatched with it. I mean, you know, in general, it's not the end of the world. But given a choice, obviously, I would rather not have one extra hole in the bird, especially in the head, to deal with. You know, most of the time, as long as it's just a little puncture hole back there, it's easy enough to fix. But if you're going to mount that bird, then I would definitely recommend not using it if there's a choice. You know, sometimes you can just squeeze them, you know. I mean, you hate not putting them out instantly, but, you know, if you compress their chest down and just squeeze them for a few minutes, they'll pass away that way, and it'll be far less detrimental than, you know, ramming a hole in the back of their head. So if I have to choose, I say don't use it. But it's also not the end of the world. I've never had one get ruined, you know, because of it. It's just a whole extra hole that you got to worry about. And obviously in this world, the fewer holes you got in the bird, the better.
I think what happens a lot is they don't get used right. And so guys don't get that one puncture. They end up missing the first time or the second time, and they go in like 3 or 4 times and they've got a freaking slash down the back of their neck.
Oh yeah.
So I'm sure you see it all the time.
But. Yeah. I've seen it. And like I said, most things are repairable, but every repair sometimes has, it detracts from the mount. So every time you put a stitch in that bird, to close up a hole, you're puckering that skin, which creates a distortion in the feathers. And in the head and neck area, that's where the feathers are the smallest, and that's where holes are seen the most. Like I said, I would definitely choose not to use it. But, you know, I understand some guys, they don't think they kill a bird, and then they look at it at the end of the day and go, ah, dang it, I want to get this one mounted. And if that's the case, normally it can still be done.
Yeah, just a little extra work or a lot of extra work, I guess. I'm sure that people outside that taxidermy field don't appreciate the amount of behind the scenes work that goes into making that perfect looking mount.
Yeah. And, going back to the care of the bird, old squaws, you know, they're the new crave right now, the new rage. Everybody's got to go get old squaws. I always laugh at how people bring them in. I mean, I've seen guys, you know, they put their tail on cardboard and strap it in with zip ties, and I've even seen one guy brought it in a shoebox with a 20-ounce pop bottle cut out so the tail could stick through the box and be protected by this 20-ounce pop bottle and all this jazz, because they think that, oh my gosh, if they touch this, you know, bird and the feathers, it's going to ruin everything. And I always tell people that if you saw what I had to put the birds through some of the initial processes of skinning, fleshing, washing, prepping, you wouldn't take half as good a care of your birds before they get to me. But it's just, there's a lot of misconception there about the, you know, how delicate you have to be with them. And with old squaws, I always tell everybody, just like everything else, a gallon Ziploc bag, slide the bird down in there, wrap the tail around the bag, and the zipper up, push the air out of it, and you're good to go on that.
Do you recommend people clean any blood off the bird before they freeze it?
It's never a bad idea. Generally, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I mean, if it's something easy, you can quick spray it off or dab it off with a wet paper towel or something. You know, it definitely helps. But it's also typically not the end of the world. I mean, you know, I deal with a lot of snow geese and, you know, people shoot them. And, of course, they're a pure white bird and they got blood all over them and stuff. But most of the time it washes out just fine. But obviously the better care is taken beforehand, the easier everything is on my end, too. So
have you gotten any Michigan trumpeter swans or bald eagles in this year?
Sadly, no, bald eagle. I did mount a couple bald eagles last year, but that was for not private individuals.
For totally legal purposes.
Yeah, they was all legal.
That's good. That's good. What was I gonna say? What about the feet? Anything that we should do with feet as far as
And not particularly. If you know it's going to be in the freezer a while, sometimes you can take wet paper towel, take like a square paper towel, soak it in water, and then wrap it around the feet. And then, you know, do the same thing, put it in plastic, squeeze the air out. You can also do that around the heads of the bird too. Put wet paper towel around the head and feet, freeze it like that. That just helps keeps birds better for longer. The more moisture you can add into the whole freezer situation, the better. If you wanted to wet down paper towel, wrap their feet up in it, that's always beneficial, but it's not necessary either, but it does help, especially if the bird's going to be in the freezer for a long time.
So this is a question that I hear, or not a question, but a comment that I hear pretty often. Some guys look down on mounting birds because of the waste of the meat. Is that a reasonably possible idea to be able to breast out the bird or eat the bird, and still get it mounted?
Yeah, absolutely. I tell people all the time, that's always a comment. I always see a nice wood duck or something and I'm like, oh man, you should have got that mounted. And they're like, oh, well, they taste so good. I'm like, well, you can do both. I've got a couple buddies that do that to me all the time. They always want the meat out of their bird, so they breast them out and bring me the bird breasted. Obviously, if you are concerned about doing it, then I say don't even try it. But as long as you do a simple incision from the top of the breastbone straight down to the butt and open it up, don't cut holes through the skin. You can flay off each side of the breast. And then fold that skin back in on itself and freeze it, and that's exactly the same cut that I do when I go to skin them out. So as long as you're very careful and you trust yourself, it's 100% easily done.
Yeah, I think it was last December, shot a bunch of Drake canvas backs, and I needed one on the wall, but I couldn't bring myself to not put them in the freezer. And yeah. I'm regretting that now, though.
If you're good with a knife, you do a lot of skinning on critters and, you know, cleaning deer or whatever, I mean, it's really super easy to get a nice sharp knife, just do a nice straight incision, open it up just enough where you can flay that each side of the breast off. It's very easy. I do it, too. Sometimes I'll get into a nice batch of wood ducks, and I love eating them, too. You know, you get that beautiful drake on the pile. Yeah, I'll just go ahead, breast it out, take the meat out of it, and then throw it in the freezer to mount for later.
Now, if guys are going on trips, you know, you filled up what, a week ago or so?
Yeah.
So if a guy was going on a trip in January, would he be able to get a hold of you before you filled up and kind of reserve spots to get in?
Yeah, I do that within reason. There's a few guys that I know currently are got some trips coming up in January that I've kind of, planned on a few birds here and there from those types of guys. That's always possible. I don't like to do it for too many people because some, you know, trips get canceled and hunts don't go according to plan. And guys that are thinking they're going to bring back 20 birds between everybody come back with one. So, I try not to do it too much, but I always do leave some leeway in there for some of my usual guys that I know are going on trips, just to help them out. I have a hard time saying no a lot, so.
That's fair. Joe Swanky says that there's no way there's no way that you're going to mount the birds the way he cleans them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a question.
Joe is one of the ones that I was referring to who always says, oh, I'd rather eat them. And I tell him every year, you can do both.
That's just his excuse to not get them mounted, apparently.
Exactly. He's a tightwad, and I know
him. He also is questioning your statement to Old Squaw or Craze, but... you got a question in here about a specific taxidermist, but I'll shoot that to you in a private message just so you don't have to answer that one way or the other live. That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
That could go well, but I don't know them, so I'm not going to do that. So what kind of competitions do you get involved in as a taxidermist? And you got anything coming up? What kind of awards have you won recently? And just kind of talk about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, there's basically three big ones you can do as a taxidermist. Every state has their own state competition. I typically do our state competition every year. It's in the middle of March at Grand Rapids during the Ultimate Sports Show. I've done that one every year for the past, gosh, I don't even know now. It's probably been 10 or 12 years I've been doing that one. And then other than the state level, there's two other ones. You can do the World Taxidermy Competition, and then there's the Nationals. Nationals are held every year within the United States. I've never done the Nationals myself. And then there's the World Taxidermy Competition, which is held every other year in the United States. One year it's held in Europe, then the next year it's held here in the U.S. I've done the World Taxidermy Competition, I think, three times now when it's been in the U.S. Those are I primarily do the world show, and then I do the state level as well. The state level is always fun. I've won lots of awards. It's been a pretty cool experience. Got into it just because of my cousin, actually. She was just a at-home taxidermist and bugged me and my dad the one year, oh, you guys should do that again. And so we threw some stuff into the competition just on a whim, and they haven't been able to get rid of me since. it's always fun. It's a good way to challenge yourself in front of a group of your peers, get judged by some of the best taxidermists in the world. They give you critiques on your birds, and hopefully you take those well, and it forces you to change what you do to get better. And this, even in taxidermy, as with any other career, if you're not changing what you're doing and doing some of the newest methods, you fall behind. And sometimes that's hard for some people to change what they do. Change is actually a good thing most of the time. I've won the best taxidermist in the state, I think, for the past, it's been 5 or 6 years now. I've won best in the state. And it's been good. I didn't start that high and that good, but I've done a lot of improvement through the years and pushed myself to get better and better, and it's paid off.
How long have you been doing taxidermy, and how did you kind of get into it?
I've had this business for 10 years now. I've always been involved with taxidermy. My dad was a taxidermist when I was growing up. He also did other things, but he also had a full-time taxidermy shop. So I've always been involved with it. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I was going to be a full-time taxidermist. But it's just kind of what fell into place as I was getting older. I've always been involved ever since I've been a kid. I've always been in a taxidermy shop.
So you kind of had all those years growing up to figure out how to do it, and it's not something you just started doing like last week or something.
Yeah, correct. I worked for my dad through a couple of the summers in high school and stuff. I would work for my dad out in the shop and get stuff done for him. And I've mounted everything. I've mounted deer and fish and all that stuff too. I haven't done it in a long time now, but. I used to do all that stuff as well. But
Quick backstory. What really got me involved was I went to college up at Lake Superior State University up in the Sioux.
No kidding.
That's where I cut my teeth on duck hunting. I was pretty much a deer hunter at that point. And when we went up there, there was no deer up there to hunt. So a few of my buddies were always out duck hunting. So freshman year, I started tagging along, learning a little bit. And then my sophomore and junior year, it just exploded and turned into hunting, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. And learning all the spots up there. And that's what got me into a psycho duck hunter. So that's kind of what started my business too, because I'd come home from Christmas and Thanksgiving break and I'd have a few ducks for some of my buddies, and I would come home to my dad's shop and mount them for a little bit of side money here and there or whatever. Just charge people hardly anything, but mount a few here and there. And then the 1 year I graduated, and I had like 30 some ducks to do, and I was like, holy crap, this is a little bit more than just mounting a couple for friends now. And the kind of within a year or two after that, I started the actual business. And then within about 3 years of starting the business, I was full time into it, running a big shop all on my own. So
you pretty much run the shop 12 months a year, or do you take like a break for season or what?
Oh no, I've been working all day today. I finally stopped working just to do this little phone thing. But I've been working since 6 a.m. this morning on a Sunday, just trying to get caught up and get things going. It's just me that does everything, so I got to do everything one bird at a time. And there's not much play time. I mean, I get out when I can for hunting and fishing and whatnot, but it's definitely a full time gig anymore.
Yeah, I think that brings up another point. I won't keep you too long because I don't want to cost you too much money. But
oh, you're fine.
there are a lot of shops where they have apprentices or people helping them out, and you might have a high level taxidermist that owns it, but your bird might not be in his hands. I know some people have run into trouble with that before.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Guys are like, I looked at his work was great, and then the bird I got back was crap. And then I found out that he hired some kid down the road to do birds for him because he couldn't have the time. I've seen that for sure. I know people ask me all the time, well, just hire somebody and you can take in more birds and, you know, make more money and all this stuff. And I don't know, it's hard for me to relinquish the power to do all these birds. I like to skin the birds and know the birds that I'm getting in before I even take them out to mount them and have my hands in all the different aspects of it. And it's hard for me to trust somebody else because, like you said, the birds sometimes are one of the more difficult things to do. And I want to be responsible for them all the way around. I don't want to have a guy pick up a bird and be dissatisfied and say, oh, well, I'm sorry, John mounted that and not me. So.
Yeah. Real quick, what is your, what do you say your favorite bird to mount is and your least favorite?
I don't know. For some reason, gadwall are always one of my favorites. I don't know. They're really nice gadwall. They always turn out so cool. And to me, they're a very pretty bird, even though a lot of people don't consider them that. So whenever people ask me that question, I don't know why, but gadwalls, I really like doing them. My least favorite birds, I don't know if I really have any. I dislike the larger birds, you know, turkeys, swans, Canada geese, stuff like that. It just takes a lot more work, working with a lot stiffer wire, a lot more sweat equity goes into those birds. My bread and butter is, I just love putting together ducks and, you know, pheasants and stuff like that too. Just that medium sized birds.
Yeah. I'm looking at your price list and I can kind of see that reflected. You're not a fan of big birds.
Well, with the larger birds comes a lot more time involved with them. So, you got double the amount of time in a goose versus a duck type of thing. You got to charge accordingly to make your money. So
and materials too, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You got double the materials in a goose versus a duck and double the time. And so all that adds in, and you don't want to, you don't want to charge too little and feel like you have to rush through the bird and give the customer a low quality mount. You want to make sure that you've charged enough so you can spend that extra time that is needed on the larger birds to, you know, give them that good look at the end.
Absolutely. And if you, I mean, when you're putting out work like you do, you give a guy one mount and you've got a customer for life, you know, they're going to come back, but
yeah,
the other way around as well.
Yeah. And that's, I've been super thankful when to get in this area that I'm in. There was nobody really near me remotely that was just a bird guy. And, it's the customers that I've got now. I could not ask for better customers. I mean, they brag me up even when I don't want them to online. And, they're always coming every year, you know, they're bringing, and that's one thing I like about doing the whole bird taxidermy thing too, is, you know, there's so many species of birds that you can shoot within Michigan. And it's not like a guy that might shoot a big buck every 5 or 6 years or something to get mounted. I'm seeing a lot of my customers every year, you know, year after year, and end up being really good friends through the years. And you start hunting with them, and it's been really rewarding in the short time that I've been doing it.
Phil Ziegler wants to know, why won't you stuff coots?
Well, Phil's got to shoot a coot. He's got to actually hit one. So
okay. if that does happen, will you mount it?
Oh yeah, I've mounted coots before.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, actually, I think they make really really cool mounts. They're such an odd looking bird. So
well, there's your answer, Phil. You have to hit one first, and since you haven't hit one, that's why he won't mount it. So we're talking with Travis McLeod, the owner of Last Flight Waterfowl Taxidermy in Lowell, Michigan. If you want to get a hold of Travis, you can contact him at 616-644-1195. He is full for this season. Travis, if you didn't shoot a banded coot, Phil. This is doing this live feed was the best idea ever. If somebody still wants you to do their bird, they don't want to go anywhere else. They've seen your work, they love it, they want it to go to you. How long is a bird good in the freezer for? And when can they get it to you? When are you going to open back up?
Okay, well, that's a common question. That's a good question, actually. What I tell people right now is I am not taking anything in between now and September 1st. So regardless if you get it to me tomorrow or you wait till September 1st, it's still going to be the same on the list to get to. Try and, you know, make that clear to people. And so even if you brought it to me now, all I'm going to do is package that bird up and put it in the freezer, and it's going to sit here frozen until I mount it. So there's no difference whether it sits in my freezer or it sits in your freezer. If it's going to sit there, I would recommend wrapping it the feet and the head with that wet paper towel, putting it in two or three layers of bags and squishing the air out of it and just keeping it in the deep freeze. And then September 1st is when I start taking in birds again for the next season. So, if you come through the door on September 1st, you're going to be first in line for the next batch of birds. And honestly, you're not going to lose any time or anything because the bird was just going to sit with me for that long anyway. To answer the question, September 1st of next year, right when season's getting back going, I will be taking birds again. And if you want to wait until then, like I said, wrap them up good in layers of plastic. A bird will last a year, no issue whatsoever, if it's wrapped appropriately. Sometime 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it'll last just fine. But every bird is different. I always recommend you get it to me ASAP if possible. That saves me worry there.
If somebody has a bird that they either destroyed or it's been in the freezer forever and they've forgotten about it. I'm not saying that's ever happened to me, but hypothetically speaking, I'm assuming that occasionally you put, you make miracles happen.
I can only do so much. with the quantity of the birds that I get in anymore, if it's going to affect the quality of the mount in return, I'm probably going to turn it away. There's no point in producing a sub-quality bird, just to have a mount. I understand maybe if it, you know, meant something, or, you know, it was your dad's last bird and he passed away, you know, whatever, and you forgot about it. Like, sometimes we could try and make something happen, but for the most part, if it's badly freezer burned, it's just not going to work. I mean, you don't want a bad looking bird on your wall, and I don't want to give you a bad looking bird to put on your wall. So,
but if someone has questions, they can shoot you a message and you can kind of let them know one way or the other before it's mounted.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I always work with people. I mean, if they bring me an old bird, you know, I always tell them that, hey, yeah, if it's borderline, we'll repackage it, put it in the freezer. When I get it out to mount, you know, if it's going to work, I'll shoot you a message or call you and let you know, like, yay or nay. If it's going to really affect and be negative towards the mount, then, you know, we might want to pass on it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm always open. I try to be very accessible. I always hear way too many horror stories on taxidermists, you know, taking animals and never returning phone calls and never being available, and people call and never get a hold of. So I try and be pretty proactive about that. I mean, if you call me or send me a message, I'm going to return it as ASAP. Even if it's where's my bird? You said it's going to be this long and now it's this long. I even return those, even though I don't like to, but I always try and return everything and keep in touch. Another thing I do real quick is, when I get to the bird to mount it, the day that I mount it, I normally text everybody a picture of their bird. Right when I'm mounting it, right when it's roughed in for the day, it gives people the ability to, number one, know that their bird is being worked on and will be ready in a few weeks. But number two, sometimes it gives people the opportunity to alter their mount as I'm doing it. If they want to tweak it one way or another, oh, what about, I want the head turned a little bit more this way, or can we lift this wing to show a little more color, or, you know, all those different things that I might be able to do right when I'm working on the bird. Sometimes people can tweak their mounts on the fly, which I feel is kind of cool opportunity for a lot of people too.
Just going to point out real quick that you said they can tweak their mounts on the fly. No, that's awesome. That's a really great service. Real quick before I let you go, because if people are trying to get a hold of Travis to ask where their mount is, he's recording this podcast, so he's unable to answer your call. So I'm sorry for that. Adam Marchbanks wants to know if there's any harm in putting the bird in a Ziploc and then submerging in water to force the air out and seal the bag.
I suppose not. I've had people wrap entire birds in soaking wet paper towel and stuff. So even if a little moisture gets in there, that's fine. It might be a little unnecessary. Vacuum sealing works great as long as you don't overdo it. To get the air out of it. I mean, whatever you can do to get the most air out of it as possible is perfectly fine. Vacuum sealing works great. I haven't had anything negative yet. It's just that I always tell people to not do it all the way. As soon as the bag gets snug around the bird, stop it and seal it. Don't let it draw all the way tight to where it sucks all the fluid out of the bird and compresses the bird all crazy. And I've had no issue with that. And it makes the birds last a long time as well when they're vacuum sealed, because there's no air getting in there then.
Just as long as it's not overdone and jacking up the feathers.
Correct, because most of those vacuum sealing bags have that little diamond pattern.
Right.
You know, guys will compress it down and take them out of the bag, and the whole back of the bird will be imprinted in that diamond pattern. Typically, most of that will come out, but sometimes they'll leave those little diamond imprints into the feathers. And if you look closely, you'll be able to see that pattern on the back of the bird, which isn't good.
Unless you want that.
Well, yeah, but most people don't. But yeah, like I said, I mean, vacuum sealing gets a bad rap. People say no, but like I said, done correctly, it is a great way to do it. You just don't want to overseal it.
Well, man, I really appreciate you joining me on this episode. Travis McLeod, Last Flight Taxidermy, 616-644-1195. I'll put the contact info in the description wherever this is posted. You can check out his work at lastflighttaxidermy.com or Last Flight Waterfowl Taxidermy on Facebook. Travis, it was a real pleasure. Really appreciate all the great information you gave to our audience.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for asking me, and I'm always willing to blabber for a while. That works fine.
Well, that's what it's for. We'll let you get back to getting those birds done and sending Joe Swanky a text to let him know his bill is due.
Okay, will do.
All right. Have a good one, man. Merry Christmas.
No problem. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Great Lakes Waterfowl Podcast, the Christmas edition. Appreciate Travis joining us. At a few points during that conversation, you probably heard me reference Facebook. We were actually broadcasting it live as we were recording it. So you were able to ask questions. And we didn't get a ton of questions, but we tried to answer all of them. And I think we're going to do that in the future with other guests as well. So it was a really enjoyable episode. Travis had lots of great information. He talked about cleaning your bird and still being able to mount it, and you know, tips for taking care of your bird, some of the myths, some of the things that you don't have to do. Talked about finishing birds off in a way that will allow them to be mounted properly. Definitely appreciate you joining us. I hope that you have a wonderful Christmas with your friends and family, and that we'll see you again in another week. This is the Great Lakes Waterfowl Podcast, powered by SuperiorDecoys.com. Merry Christmas.